no games. Welcome back, NHL. The Nashville Predators and the other 23 teams involved in the postseason are set to open training camp for next month's restart. Preds will be on the ice at Bridgestone Arena around lunchtime today, not open to the public. News from an NBA contender, Lakers guard Rajon Rondo broke his right thumb in practice last night. Could miss up to 2 months. Team says Rondo will have surgery this week. Exciting finishes in live sports on Sunday. In NASCAR, they went four wide on the final lap of the Cup race in Kentucky, and rookie Cole Custer got to the line for his first win. And the PGA Tour was in Muirfield, where Colin Morikawa won a fun playoff with Justin Thomas in the Workday Charity Open. Morikawa had rallied from three back with three holes to go. MLS tournament, Minnesota beat Kansas City 2-1, Salt Lake 2-0 over Colorado. Breaking news at once on your home for the Titans and Vols, 104.5 The Zone.
Blaine, Mark, and Kevin, this is the Wake Up Zone, powered by All Four Seasons Garage Doors on 104.5 The Zone.
The Zone. Welcome into the Wake Up Zone, powered by All Four Seasons Garage Doors. When trust matters, you can count on All Four Seasons Garage Doors in Nashville. Professional installation and repair, family owned and operated. Go to fourseasonsgarages.com to find out more. Alongside Mark Howard, Jonathan Schaefer, our producer, and Kevin Inger, Blaine's out this week. Good to have you here. Our phone number is 615-737-1045 or on Twitter at WUZ1045. Good to be back. How is everybody this morning?
Good to see you back, Kev.
Yeah, after a week last week, it just seemed like it was chock full of good news and, you know, positive energy about football and everything else. So just glad to be back here.
Well, I'll hope I can help the ball club. We're nothing but sunshines and rainbows here at the Wake Up Zone. And Jonathan Schaefer, our producer, especially happy to see you because the care and feeding of me when you're gone, I think, wears him out. He's got to burp me. He's got to change me. He's got to look over me. It's a four-hour babysitting job. And with you, he can just do his job. So I'll speak for Schaefer.
It's not that complicated.
As Rodney Dangerfield would say, it's not easy being me. Well, Kevin, it's not easy being you.
I appreciate that.
If you look up man-child in the dictionary, Mark Howard's picture's right there.
Oh, I appreciate it, Schaefer.
We've made it easier. There are only a couple. You know, we've eliminated one break per hour, so I mean that makes it a little bit easier. But yeah, it's good to be here. Had a fun week last week, just kind of hanging with the family. We didn't venture very far from home, but we had a good time. As far as college football, you know, we heard last week the Big Ten is going to conference only. The Pac-12 is going to play a conference-only football schedule. We'll find out what the SEC and the other power conferences decide to do. The athletic directors for all the SEC schools are supposed to meet today in Birmingham. And, you know, it's a pretty sobering talk from Greg Sankey, who to me has really been a level-headed voice in all this stuff over the last few months. You know, he hasn't really made any decisions until it's time to make decisions. But he says his concern level is high to very high about the spread of COVID-19 and what it can mean for the football season. Says they have a lot of different contingency plans they can consider, but the athletic directors will meet today, and he says that this, you know, there'll be a process to try to decide, you know, what to do between now and likely the end of July.
Yeah, I think Sankey and the ADs in the SEC are boxed in. When you have 10 of your 14 schools in areas that have the hottest COVID-19 numbers, I don't know what other direction they can go. And they will likely put it off after their meeting today and hope things will get better in the next 2 weeks. I just don't see it. And I don't see, from a practical standpoint, why it's a good idea not to to stay in conference. I think everybody else is. We saw the Pac-12 follow suit on Friday after the Big Ten, and I just think the Power Five conferences are heading in that direction. It's inevitable. They can stave off the inevitable. They can remain in denial, but I don't think a whole lot is going to change. Sankey was also expressing frustration with the non-mask wearing of our population, you know, which a lot of people feel like keeps giving this virus more life and accounts for some of the bad numbers, that people just felt like, well, I've been in my house for 2 months. Now I can go out and just do what I want. And that's really not necessarily the case. But Sankey feels like that has contributed to the situation that many of these SEC schools find themselves in. You're in Louisiana, you're in Florida, you're in Texas, you're in Tennessee. Going to be hard to do anything other than stay in your own conference.
I guess my question, though, is, you know, what's the difference between playing SEC versus SEC and then mixing in, you know, games against the ACC or, if you know, like Alabama and USC? I mean, are those games any less safe than it would be to play another conference game? I guess that's one of the questions I have about this whole deal.
Well, I think it's also a matter of pushing back the start of the regular season. And that, in my opinion, is going to be 2 to 4 weeks. It's either going to be mid-September or it's going to be, first week of October. So I think I think that is definitely going to exist. But I think for economic reasons, more than anything else, Kevin, I think a lot of these ADs, could decide, to just keep it in-house and maybe add a couple of conference games. That was the other thing that came out of the Pac-12, that they have a 9-game model, they have a 10-game model, so it'll be interesting to see if teams adjust that way. So you might be seeing, if the SEC decides to stay in conference, Tennessee might have to add a couple of games, might end up playing like LSU or, one of the other teams in the West that they probably don't want to, but I'm sure they'd rather play the Charlottes, the Furmans, the Troys of the world, and the only big game they really lose is Oklahoma.
Yeah. I wouldn't be all that opposed to a 10-game SEC schedule. I think that might be a lot of fun. But, I just want to see them play a season. I know everybody else does, too. But I guess, kind of going back to my question of a minute ago, is there any less risk in Kentucky going, 60 miles down the road to play Louisville than there is to play any other game? I don't know that's any more dangerous than and then you talk about, some of these teams, to play conference games in the SEC, you're still going to have to get on airplanes to go. So, a plane ride's a plane ride, but I'm kind of with you. I think they'll probably all end up in the same place when you talk about these Power Five conferences and probably just play some sort of conference only schedule that, maybe starts a month late at the beginning of October or wherever it is. So I guess we'll find out here in the next couple of weeks. But that was pretty, were you surprised, as far as the Big Ten making that announcement late last week? Because, that sort of came out of nowhere. I don't know that anybody was totally shocked by the news itself, but the timing of it.
I think they conferred with their medical people, and their medical people said it's not going to be any different a month from now, so you might as well make your decision. I think they did it out of deference to the out-of-conference schools that they were, not going to play this year, and they just felt like, we're going to do it that way. Now, I've heard at the University of Tennessee, they're acting like they're going to start the season against Charlotte. And that might very well be the case. I mean, the SEC, who knows? But, Kevin, I've said this in the last couple of weeks. The more you see this, the more you wonder, how are they going to play? How are they going to keep these kids healthy? How are they going to keep these kids, not congregating with the rest of the college population and not testing positive? I just think they're howling at the moon. I think you could see ultimately a lot of positive tests even in September, October. And then what do you do? So I think this is just another step in the process of them trying to minimize their risk and hope to get a football season in. Because the next step after that is the spring, and they don't really want to go there.
Yeah,
but it remains a nuclear option. Yeah, a definite nuclear option.
The spring just is not, that's not a very good option at all. Because, if you try to play in the spring, then what big-time players are going to want to, risk playing in the spring if they're going to be high draft picks? And well, plus, you're trying to play two football seasons in one calendar year. It seems like a lot to ask, too, under any conditions.
Exactly. But I think a lot of players, even if they go exclusively in conference, you know, could decide that they're going to skip the season, especially with a late start. I mean, that is sort of the belief. So, you know, we'll have to see what happens, today when the SEC ADs meet. But a lot of people feel like they are not going to, move as dramatically as the Big Ten and the Pac-12. But I think ultimately they're headed in that direction. Sankey's a smart guy, and he can read the tea leaves. And you just don't see it getting better in the next 2 or 3 weeks.
We'll hear from Sankey in a moment when we come back. Real quick on the NFL, the league and the players union are supposed to meet today also to talk about the terms for camp and the season. About 2 weeks out from the scheduled start of training camp, one thing they have to decide on is the preseason schedule. Players want no preseason games. Owners want 2 preseason games. Where does that thing fall? Did they not play any? Did they play one? Where do you think it comes down?
I don't know. The players can only suggest. The owners ultimately have the final say. That's the way the collective bargaining agreement is set up. But when it comes to the protocols, when it comes to the method of opting out, when it comes to a lot of that stuff, then I think the players get more say. But, I mean, you know the owners. They don't want to miss, a couple of opportunities, maybe not at gate receipts, but maybe TV. I don't know how much TV money is tied into the preseason. Everybody's got their own separate deals. But I think the league also has an argument that they want to, go through with this to get the players and the coaches used to the different way they're going to run games in the regular season. So that's the owner's argument. The players, the players want to limit that. They want to limit 11-on-11. There's a lot of things in there that they're demanding, but they can't demand. They can only ask.
And you don't want to have a jersey swap either after you've had, three hours exactly. of hitting each other, because that's going to help. All right, 6:13 on 104.5 The Zone. This is the Wake Up Zone, powered by All Four Seasons Garage Doors. When we come back, we'll hear a little of what Greg Sankey, the SEC commissioner, said, and we'll do that in just a moment on 104.5 The Zone. It is 6:19. Welcome back. Wake Up Zone, powered by All Four Seasons Garage Doors. FourSeasonsGarages.com is their website. Want to be part of the show? Easy. 615-737-1045 or on Twitter at WUZ1045. Coming up around 7:30, we'll have MTSU Athletics Director Chris Massaro with us. Also, Coach Mack a little later on the show. Dave McGinnis up at 8 o'clock. So, full hour with Coach Mack coming up between 8 and 9, as we always do on Monday. We mentioned earlier to start the show, Greg Sankey, the SEC commissioner, talking about his concerns regarding the coronavirus and how it might relate to the football season. And, going on Marty and McGee on the SEC network and just kind of discussing the whole thing. A clip or two from the SEC commissioner as athletic directors get ready to meet in Birmingham today. Here's Greg Sankey.
Hi. High to very high. I look at the numbers every day, and the important issue is not just numbers or looking at numbers. It is trying to understand and comprehend, and that's where literally you want experts, moving you away from the scroll or the titles at the bottom of a TV screen or the interviews of this expert or that, and find people out of the public domain who are highly intelligent, highly educated, highly skilled at helping guide information. And we put a medical advisory group together in early April with the question of what do we have to do to get back to activity? And they've been a big part of the conversation. But the direct reality is not good. And the notion that we've politicized medical guidance of distancing and breathing masks and hand sanitization, ventilation and being outside, being careful where you are in buildings. I mean, there's some very clear advice about you can't mitigate and eliminate every risk, but how do you minimize the risk? And so I would say to everybody listening, you know, you watch Marty when he's sitting in a lawn chair outside a NASCAR facility because he's not in the inner bubble from time to time, and he's got himself protected. And I go to Starbucks and wherever, and I've got a mask on. We have to heed that. We are running out of time to correct and get things right. And as a society, we owe it to each other, in my view, to be as healthy as we can be.
SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey on Marty and McGee on SEC Network over the weekend. And I thought he made a lot of sense in what he said right there. But saying his concern level is high to very high about the coronavirus and how it might affect SEC football for this season coming up.
Absolutely. I thought he clocked it talking about, you know, some of the problems that health officials have faced of people either, you know, thinking, you know, the goofy notion that this whole thing's a hoax, refusing to buy in to the safety measures because they feel like it violates their freedoms when it's really to protect other people from them. I mean, that's just the way it is if you don't wear a mask. And that has contributed, you know, to the numbers that have shot back up. Well said by the commissioner, but I still think, again, I'm not a medical expert by any stretch of the imagination, but it is hard to imagine anything profoundly changing in the next 2 or 3 weeks. Maybe it will. And I think the SEC will hold off as long as they possibly can. But unlike the Big Ten, they're in some greater affected areas even than that conference. So I just don't see, you know, how the SEC can arrive at any other conclusion than to keep it in conference, at least in my opinion.
Going back to last week, you know, everybody's waiting to see what the Ivy League was going to do for their fall sports. Do they really set the tone for everybody else?
No.
I sort of had to roll my eyes at that one a little bit, that like, well, the power conferences are waiting to see what the Ivy League is going to do before they make some sort of decision. Those are apples and oranges when you talk about the amount of money involved in football for those two, for the Ivy League versus everybody else.
Power Five plays in a different world. I think, you know, that they took note. And I thought the more profound story that came out of this, I think we had Dennis Dodd or Tim Corbin, I think, said it last week. It wasn't the Ivy League story. It was Stanford cutting 11 sports. And he said of all the schools, he thought Stanford would be the last school to cut sports. And he said that sent out some alarms that a school like Stanford, who prides itself on carrying that many varsity sports, you know, they won the all-around trophy, And that's a school that is sort of a model for all of that. And now, you know, they had to make that tough decision. You know, that to me says there are going to be a lot of schools that are going to be dropping, you know, non-revenue sports, which is really unfortunate because it deprives young people of the opportunity to get scholarships to school. It's not so much them playing those sports, it's giving them an opportunity, you know, to get that education and to contribute to our society. I mean, you know, we might be, you know, losing, you know, the next medical researcher. I mean, who knows, you know, what we could be losing if some of these kids can't go to college. So that is way more alarming than what the Ivy League did.
Yeah. Another thing I wonder too. Okay, so the Big Ten says we're only going to play conference games, and one of the leagues that's affected by that is the MAC, with, you know, those teams in that league playing games against the Big Ten for pretty sizable paychecks that help, you know, really fund a lot of those athletic departments. Well, can they get some sort of compensation still out of the deal? Like, you know, Ohio State, if it's playing Ball State, can Ball State still get at least a fraction of the money that they would have received from that, you know, to help them out a little bit? I mean, what happens to those, you know, with the contracts that are in place?
I'm not sure, Kevin. I think it's different with every school. Theoretically, they could, you know, they could sue them, but they don't want to do that because you don't want to burn that bridge. I think what they'll get down the line is a promise, you know, for another play date. But really, you know, beyond that, this is all about money in the first place. So I don't know if a lot of these Power Five schools are in a position to write checks out. Some of them are, but some of them definitely aren't. To write checks to schools for games they didn't play. So I don't know if that's possible. It's a great question for Chris Massaro.
You tell me Ohio State can't cut a check for $500,000 or something to the Ball State to at least help out a little bit. I mean,
I don't know what the arrangement is.
They're making a killing off those TV contracts.
No, listen, you're probably right, but I don't know. It was in reading the stories, it was unclear, you know, what some of these schools were going to do. So I think that first of all, the MAC schools don't want to upset the Power Five schools because, you know, they've got a schedule in all sports, not just football. We're talking basketball, baseball, all the other sports. So they don't want to, you know, ruin those relationships. So, yeah, there's a way of transacting. Maybe they had a basketball game. I mean, who knows how they can pay these schools back or at least, you know, try to give them some remuneration. But right now, I think it's a tough day for the group of five. I mean, it certainly is. And as far as, you know, Division II, NAIA, Division III, really, I mean, I think you're going to see a lot of schools just pull the plug on their seasons this year. They have no choice. I think it's interesting what they're talking about, just in the way of, again, telling these kids that their scholarships would be good, for next year, kicking the can down the road. We saw what happened, in baseball, where all of a sudden a lot of kids ended up getting screwed because the NCAA said, yeah, you can have these numbers, but your scholarship money doesn't change, right. Which is absurd. So I'm not going to do this if schools decide not to play this fall.
All right, on to the NFL. The NFL and NFLPA, as I said, they're going to meet today and talk about terms for returning to play. Training camp's about 2 weeks out. How optimistic are you that'll get off the ground as scheduled here toward the end of July?
Kev, they got a lot to talk about. And I'm not saying they're – the players are going to refuse to report. But the one thing we don't know is that will there be a significant segment of players that opt out? A lot of players have looked at this and said it's not worth it. There are a lot of veteran players, and much like in baseball, veteran players who are financially secure, who might have some family issues, could easily look at this and say, you know what, I'm going to take a pass this year. I understand I won't be credited for a year of service, but that's okay. So, they're not sure right now. The NFLPA wants daily testing. They want an acclimation period because there was no off season. They don't want a preseason. They want emergency protocols, which would be utilized in the event of an outbreak. They want to know what that is. And the whole opt-out rule. Can you come to camp and then opt out? Can you opt out and then decide you want to opt back in since they're not going to be in a bubble? Are there going to be economic givebacks where the players put a certain percentage of their salaries in escrow and until the league reaches a certain level of revenue, do they get that money back? So there's a lot of things at work here that each side wants from the other. And I said it before, the NFLPA can suggest while the NFL, really can make the rules.
I think most of what the players are asking for doesn't sound all that unreasonable to me. I don't understand about the money being put into escrow, to be paid later on down the road. If you're getting the money for the TV contracts, and I know they're not going to be the gate receipts you normally get, but to me, if the players play the season, they should get paid for playing the season.
Well, the other part of this is too is that it would go into the formula for the salary cap for next year, believe it or not. And if I'm the players, I understand if you want to tell the owners to go pound sand as far as wanting to put, some of your pay in escrow. But on the other hand, if the salary cap goes down next year, say the salary cap dropped $10 million, be a lot of players that would lose their jobs. So you might be cutting off your nose to spite your face if you're the players, and it's up to D. Smith to really look at this and do some hard research and give the players some decent choices.
Also for the Titans and teams that have players on the tags, whether it's franchise or I think there's one transition tag player, there's a 15 total. It's decision time on Derrick Henry. And the deadline is Wednesday for getting something done on a long-term deal. And I was reading some of what Adam Schefter wrote, that, the uncertainty over the financial situation with the coronavirus is really going to lead to very little getting done, maybe one or two players at the very most. What do you think happens with Derrick Henry? Do we see anything happen this week, or does it just kind of go by and he plays on the tag this season?
Everybody, Riley has smiled and said, you know how these things go right down to the deadline. I think there's a lot on each side that could be cause for disagreement. And, we went down, how Derrick Henry, for what that's worth. ESPN had him ranked only fifth overall among running backs, and that's because of his lack of versatility. He's a great runner, but his pass receiving numbers are not close, to Saquon Barkley or Christian McCaffrey or Ezekiel Elliott, or Alvin Kamara. And look at Ezekiel Elliott, really the latest to sign a big-money deal. And you could make the case last year that he didn't look like the back that he was in previous years. And that's what you get, a rapidly, diminishing commodity. And maybe Henry is different. I mean, goodness knows, he trains like no other. But I don't know, Kevin. This could go down to the wire. I know the Titans love Henry for a lot of reasons. He's a team guy. He doesn't seem to have an ounce of diva in him, which I think we all like. But at the end of the day, he is not the same kind of back as the other four that I just mentioned. So I don't think he's going to get that money. But then the other side would contend and say, in this NFL, defensive players are smaller and maybe speedier, but against a powerful runner like Henry, the Titans have an advantage. So there is something to be said for his value, his increased value. And Kevin, the other thing that you and I, know from, being big baseball fans, Derrick Henry's a really good playoff running back. He's had great postseason games. And that has to be, in my opinion, that has to be considered too. We've known a lot of really good backs that haven't produced in the playoffs. That is not the case with Henry.
Yeah, he was terrific. I mean, he made all the difference in those two wins last year, which didn't impress SiriusXM host Jeff Schwartz very much. Said Titans fans are the most delusional fan base out there going into 2020. He basically downgraded the two playoff wins against New England and Baltimore, and said they got rolled by Kansas City, which wasn't necessarily true. The Titans led for a whole lot of the first half, but I don't know if he's like just trying to troll fans or what he's doing there, but I thought it was pretty funny to see that and see the reaction that led to on Twitter yesterday.
Everybody's got an opinion.
I guess so. But it was, they played really well down the stretch. It wasn't like they just, they were a total fluke. I mean, they played, after they made the quarterback switch, it was a completely different team and season for them.
How do you say the Ravens win was a fluke? They beat the crap out of the Ravens.
They did. They hammered a team that's one of the top seeds on the road.
You know, I could. I think the argument with the Patriots is they were sort of a declining team, and Brady wasn't Brady, and all this, but they still beat them. I mean, they still beat them in Foxborough. So I don't want to hear that. I really don't. Those were well-earned wins.
Absolutely. But back to Derrick Henry. We'll find out. You know, the deadline, as we said, is Wednesday for Henry and the other 14 tagged players around the NFL. I don't know how to look at the whole pass catching thing. I understand that you want versatility out of your running back, but do they really need him to be, you know, a key pass catcher in their offense with the way they want to use him? I mean, he's basically just to pound the crap out of the, you know, the defense, and especially if you have the lead, you ride him to the finish line.
Well, with what they do, Henry fits perfectly. You know, in that zone, you know, inside and outside zone running game. Look at the numbers. So obviously, they're doing something right.
Yeah, but that's the decision out there for this week for the Titans and Derrick Henry, and we'll get some clarity on that by Wednesday. NHL training camps get started this week. The Preds get ready for Arizona in the first round. They'll be playing out in Edmonton. They got the agreement in place late last week. We'll talk about that when we come back. 6:38 the time. The Wake Up Zone. We're powered by All Four Seasons Garage Doors. We'll resume in just a moment on 104.5 The Zone. It is 6:44. We say welcome back to the Wake Up Zone. We're powered by All Four Seasons Garage Doors. FourSeasonsGarages.com is where you go to find out more. Alongside Mark Howard, I'm Kevin Ingram. Jonathan Schaefer, our producer. Our phone number is 615-737-1045. Coming up in less than an hour, MTSU Athletics Director Chris Massaro will be our guest. We'll get into some of these issues related to the coronavirus and fall sports. You know, it's been obviously becomes more of a hot topic as we get closer to the end of July here. As far as the NHL, ready to start for training camp, the Predators will be on the ice at Bridgestone Arena around noon today. Not open to the public. Everything is, of course, very much locked down as they, you know, get back on the ice and practice for the start of the season. It will be August 2nd for the Predators. They'll play Arizona in the Western Conference playoffs out in Edmonton, Alberta. So they'll get ready starting today, and we'll see where the Preds go from here. But they kind of keep your fingers crossed. Mark, you want to be excited about these things, you know, about baseball and about hockey and NBA coming back and all that, but I find myself just not very optimistic that all this is going to go, you know, as planned. But you hope they can at least, you know, get what's left of these seasons in.
Well, I think hockey has a great shot at pulling it off, because the numbers in Canada are frankly going down, and I think they've got a good plan for the players, and I think they're going to buy into it. You don't hear a lot of complaining, you know, from NHL guys. That is just sort of who they are. But they've got everything set up, you know, for the most part in Edmonton and Toronto, and you know, the NHL trying to minister to, you know, the players' every need. You know, they've set up multiple restaurants inside the bubble, so to speak. Multiple restaurants, food trucks, movie theaters, state-of-the-art fitness areas, so the players don't feel trapped. And let's face it, for some of these teams, they're not going to be staying there for very long. You hope the Preds have an extended stay, but you know, who knows? They start August the 2nd against Arizona, as you mentioned. Their schedule against the Coyotes, August 2nd, Game 2, August 4th, Game 3, August 5th. So they have a back-to-back, obviously no travel. It's a best of five. So Game 4, if needed, would be on the 7th, and a deciding Game 5 would be on August 9th.
If all this goes as planned, it sounds like a lot of fun, because they're talking about three games per day in both cities. The games in Toronto Central Time would start at 11 o'clock, 3 o'clock, and 7 o'clock. For Edmonton, 1, 5:30, and 9:30. I'm all in on 3 games per day in each city. That sounds good to me. And as you said, the Predators will play that best of five against Arizona. And you're right. You know, for those four teams to get eliminated from each site, they'll only be there about a week or so as far as, you know, actually playing games. They'll be there longer than that, you know, leading up to it. But they also, when they approved this whole restart plan back at the end of last week on Friday, they also approved a 4-year CBA extension, which, regardless of how any of this goes, to me, that's really significant news, Mark, for a league that's had two major shutdowns in the last 20 years, that they're going to have, you're talking about, a half dozen years at least of labor peace. That sounds good for the NHL.
Yeah, for the first time since Gary Bettman has been commissioner, that they've had a CBA agreement and no work stoppage. So that is good. As far as a flat salary cap, not good if you're a team that likes to spend a lot of money or a team that wants to go out and spend lavishly on a free agent. That's not going to happen. The other thing this doesn't have that I think some people were surprised about were, buyouts. No compliance buyouts. So David Poile is going to have to be resourceful if he wants to make Kyle Turris go away. That would seem to be the answer to a lot of the Predators' problems. If they could find a way to get somebody to eat Kyle Turris's contract, I just don't know how he's going to do it. He might have to send, a prospect or two with Turris to sweeten it, but that is sort of weighing the Predators down. They could still possibly re-sign Craig Smith at what he's making, or maybe a little less. I don't think they're going to re-sign Grantland, but we'll see.
How many years does Turris have left
on his contract? He's got right. I think he's got 3 after this year.
Gotcha. How much does this, what happens in this postseason for Nashville? You've talked before about them needing to do some overhaul on the roster. How much does that affect, what might happen here in this offseason coming up, which will be a very different offseason?
It's a great question. We're going to have Scott Burnside on later, and presumably one of us will ask that question. I think if they go 1-and-done, David Poile's got to take a really hard look at this roster. They've got to get younger. They've got to figure out a way to get Tomasino, who's their top prospect, on this team next year. But they do. They need younger legs. The window of opportunity still exists, but I think he's got to, he's got to make some alterations. And David has not been afraid to make the big trade. And with such a short turnaround, the next season in the NHL starts December 1st. So depending on when you exit the tournament, I don't know how much time your GM is going to have. But with all that being said, I think it definitely should determine, what David Poile does next year. Because remember, Kev, if they go 1-and-done, then in my opinion, this is just an extension of a disappointing season. If they win a couple of playoff series, then maybe you think, okay, maybe certain guys, should stay around. So, this is a great question with a very fluid answer. So, call me in mid-August and I might have a different opinion, but I think if they go out early, David has got some serious issues ahead of him.
There was some live sports yesterday, including a fun finish in the NASCAR race in Kentucky, and also in the PGA Tour event up in Dublin, Ohio, where they're playing back-to-back weeks. They'll have the Memorial up there this week. But Colin Morikawa, I think that guy's going to be a big star on the PGA Tour. He's got a great swing. He's won some, including yesterday, where Justin Thomas, it looked like, was in good shape to win. Morikawa was 3 shots back with 3 to go. Thomas left the door open with a couple of bogeys, and Morikawa, was able to get it to a playoff. it looked like Thomas is going to win. He made a 50-footer for birdie on the first playoff hole, but then Morikawa pours in a 25-footer right on top of him to extend it. And then they got to the third hole, and Thomas was behind a tree, and he was it was kind of curtains for him after that, because Morikawa just, you know, he got to the green easily and made par. But it was a fun finish in that playoff, and two guys are obviously rising stars in the tour. Thomas already there, and Morikawa, I think you're going to see more of the same.
Alabama legend Justin Thomas. Mm-hmm. Morikawa, though, has participated in four PGA tournaments this year, missed two cuts, won two tournaments.
But he had that long stretch of making the cut. I mean, he had made it like over 20 consecutive times. I mean, he was, they're talking about it with Tiger Woods, you know, and how many consecutive cuts made. But, man, he just looks like a really good young player. But, man, that was pretty cool in that first playoff hole where it looked like, I mean, Tom, you make a 50-footer for birdie. Yeah. You think, all right, man, I got this thing in the bag. And then Morikawa makes a little bender there to keep it going.
Might find their way to the Lee Company Hot Performer.
Oh, they very well could. That's right. That'll be in just a little bit. 6:53 the time. This is the Wake Up Zone, powered as always by All Four Seasons Garage Doors. Key times for college athletics and looking at the fall seasons coming up. The SEC athletic directors will meet today. What's ahead for that conference this fall? We'll hear more from the commissioner on the other side. So hang around. More Wake Up Zone coming up next.